Blog Talk Radio.
I have a rather important announcement, and yes, it concerns Cheetos and chicken fries. Burger King has taken these two deliciously iconic snacks and have created Cheetos chicken fries. They're like original chicken fries made with white meat chicken, all juicy on the inside, but dangerously cheesy on the outside, and cooked to crispy perfection. It's like Burger King took the perfect snack and made the perfect snack. Try them now, or they'll be gone faster than an order at Cheetos chicken fries. New Cheetos chicken fries only at Burger King. Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servo-Didio, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Just so excited to be back on the air this season with an incredible, incredible season of episodes of Insight into Healing. I am a licensed clinical social worker, psychotherapist. I work with children, adults, families, and couples on various issues, including anxiety, depression, domestic violence, sexual trauma, infidelity, communication, interaction, and relational skills. I have my private practice here in Mamaroneck, New York. Also, please check out my new published book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, or www.ccbpublishing.com/aservodidio.html. Also, please find my internet television show, The Alexa Show, which airs Sunday nights at 8 p.m. on alexatvshow.com. Also, if you have any questions, feel free to email me at insightintohealing@gmail.com or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. All questions and names will remain anonymous. Well, so exciting. Insight into Healing, as you've known, has been expanding. It will be broadcasting by way of Al Cole from CBS Radio. Through the success of Al's nationally syndicated show, People of Distinction, Al's talk show, as well as his other entire radio network, airs with other CBS radio shows on the giant iTunes radio network. Among the talk show clients on Al Cole's radio network is the international actress Dee Wallace, who is best known for starring in one of the biggest films ever, E.T. Well, I'm just so excited to kick off this season, and tonight I decided to go do something a little bit different. Tonight I will be taking questions from our listeners. As you know, some listeners will call in with their questions, while others will send an email to insightintohealing@gmail.com. So let's start with our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, I saw your information on Facebook. I'm wondering if you've ever addressed anxiety and mild depression and how it translates into dependency on video gaming in young men 18 years to 25 years old. How is it possible for a young man to extricate himself from this addiction of sorts, of escaping into the video gaming and basically ignoring other important life aspects? If you are able to address this on your show, will you please let me know dates and times, and I'm sure to listen. Thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing your views and suggestions. Well, thank you so much for sending this question in, because I find this is such a relevant question in this day and age. So much now when social media, computer, electronics are really taking over our lives, taking over the internet, taking over daily activities, where everything can be done by the touch of the screen or on a phone or laptop or a computer, that I find social interaction is diminishing and diminishing by the minute. So yes, anxiety and depression can translate itself into dependency on video gaming. And I think also when it turns into teens. You know, a lot of times when I work with teens or adults, men or women, that suffer from anxiety and depression, a very common characteristic symptom trait is they begin to isolate. They begin to cut themselves off from the external world. They are not enjoying activities they usually are. They're not going to different events. They're not participating in sports after school events or going out to meet with friends. So many times these young people, as well as adults, will remain home. And because also I think the social media makes it so easy for us to do everything at our fingertips, at the keyboards, this can also be a trigger too, that sometimes you almost forget that you're not having that face-to-face social interaction with someone, and that it's so much easier to be doing it through the web, through our keyboards. So yes, I can definitely see how anxiety and depression will lead to a dependency on video gaming. And I think a lot of times, too, in a lot of these games, these young people are playing with others through the phone, through the computer, through Skype. So they feel that, yes, I am interacting. But it's very important to realize interaction through social media, through Skype, is not the same as interaction face-to-face, being able to speak about different things, not just interacting through a sport. And I understand, yes, you know, this is a game, and this video gaming can be considered a sport to some. But I think it's old, you know, that old of going out and actually speaking with someone in person and working on that, because I think that helps build self-esteem, self-confidence, and building your sense of self. So what I find a lot of times, what I find from parents or individuals that come in suffering from depression and anxiety and realize little by little that they're isolating themselves, they are becoming more introverts, staying home and really just doing things through video games or through the internet, I try to have them start to take a look back. When did this all start? Can you remember when you realized, okay, staying home doing the video games was more important or took precedence over going out or going to meet a friend for lunch or going to that after-school activity or going to see a movie? When did that start becoming important? And was there some sort of event that triggered that? Was there any type of trauma? Was there any type of loss or feeling discouraged about that? Because sometimes that can be associated. So then they start to be able to turn inward and going towards the game for that validation, for that communication, and that almost fills that void of not being maybe accepted by those on the outside, feeling judged, not feeling good enough. So the game becomes their way of showing power, a way of taking control, which can be healthy in some ways too. But if you find it's becoming an addiction means it's really impacting your quality of life. You are giving up interacting with others, you're isolating, the video game becomes more important than anything else, that's when you start to say, okay, other areas of my life are suffering due to this type of addiction. And you start, again, as this person who wrote in, ignoring other important life aspects. How are you interacting with your family? How are you interacting with your peers? And if you work, fellow coworkers. I think you always have to keep that outside interaction going on, even if it is just with family or friends, because that keeps you motivated. That keeps you in the loop of doing things. So what I would say for this mother of this young man, to start speaking to your son, finding out when, again, this all started, and what do these video games serve? As any addiction, I find they serve a purpose. Are they giving comfort? Are they giving satisfaction? Are they, if someone's angry, they're giving them control. Finding out, one, okay, what is this video game doing for me? And two, when has it become such a big part of my life? And I think by being able to really open that up and being able to speak to this young man, especially these men between 18 to 25 years old, letting them understand that, yes, children that age, adults that age, it's okay to play video games, but your whole life cannot be surrounded by just doing video games. There has to be other aspects of your life. You can't be just doing one thing. That it's important to make sure you're interacting with the outside world. And like with any addiction, it's going to speak to someone. Is it to a guidance counselor? Is it to a school psychologist or seeing a therapist as myself in a private practice to kind of discuss saying, you know, I think there's something going on. And a lot of times, if the person playing the video games who has a video addiction, they might not really realize that this is an addiction, that this has taken over their life. They're having fun. This is what everyone my age does. We play video games. Yes, but really have to look at it and say, is this really impacting my quality of life? And am I giving up on other areas of my life and letting this take over? So I think it's really important to be able to also see what came first. Sometimes the video gaming, people can find really that they're attached to it, that it's really filling a need, and then they start not interacting with others and then almost start becoming anxious when trying to go out there and really interact with an actual person in face-to-face situations. So they start becoming anxious, and a lot of times when there's anxiety, people say, okay, well, then I'm just not going to do this. You know, if someone's anxious about going on buses, I just won't take a bus, or I won't just go on the subway. But the problem, one of the hugest problems with anxiety is it doesn't just stay to one area of your life. So if you just say, okay, I'm just going to do this and not that, or I'll avoid this not to feel anxiety, anxiety, if not addressed, will go into all areas of your life. So it's important to be able to work with someone, a professional, on the mild depression, on the anxiety, and find out where that core is, where that origin is, and where those blocked beliefs or feelings are coming from. And then allowing this person to sit with that, to process that. And it's not going to be outcome or result overnight. This, again, is going to take time. And we also can't just rip away the video games. We have to start introducing healthier ways of interaction. Not saying that video gaming is unhealthy, but like anything, everything has to be done in moderation. So maybe starting to introduce, maybe are there video game groups that you can go out to, like a trivia night, or is there video games where other people, so you can start interacting with other people, because I find it almost becomes this triad with anxiety, the depression, the video games, isolation, staying home, that going out becomes bigger and bigger of a threat or of anxiety ridden, that you start avoiding it. So I think it's slowly but surely trying to find different ways of bringing yourself back, or as a parent, helping or assisting your child and introducing themselves to healthier coping skills and being able to say, okay, what is this gaming, this addiction serving as me, for me, and how can I move through it, and how can I develop and utilize healthier coping skills? Thank you again so much for writing in this question, and please feel free to send me any other updates to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Let's go on to our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, I'm writing to you because I'm concerned about my grandchild. He is now 8 years old. When he was 3, his parents got divorced. My daughter started dating right away and also bringing in new boyfriends. The last one she dated for about a year, my grandson really liked him. They became very attached. A few months ago, the relationship ended. I noticed my grandson has become withdrawn and quiet, so different to how he usually is. Is there something we should worry about, or maybe is this just a phase? Yes, this is also a very important question, too, because I think as you brought up different ages of 3 when his parents got divorced and now he is 8, I think one thing as parents, as adults, as practitioners, we have to look at the different stages of development, of attachment, of being of bonding. And I think knowing that, you know, at certain ages, children are going through attachment phases. They are going through different developmental stages. So they might not understand or can really grasp the idea of the different boyfriends coming in and leaving, coming in and leaving, even though mom can comfort him and explain what these reasons are. It's still traumatic for a child to have someone that they like, that they feel attachment to come and then to go and then reintroduce somebody else. Not saying that you have to stay with someone forever or that you can't date other people, but I think it has to be done in a way where it's healthy for the child and healthy for his development. So it's not introducing all these different people, because I think that after a while, a child, which I've seen in my private practice, starts to feel, I can't keep getting so close to people because I'm getting hurt, so my next move will, maybe I won't get so attached, I won't get so close. And then they start feeling, which I've seen with a lot of my clients and people in other cases, is that they don't want to have that attachment because they keep feeling they're going to be discouraged, they're going to be abandoned. And then that becomes kind of an underlying theme, consciously or subconsciously, throughout their life. And I think at different stages of growth is when children develop those different feelings, those different relationships, being able to interact with others. So that can really, you know, stunt a child's developmental growth and the way they interact in the future with peers, with loved ones, intimate relationships, and at work, to be able to understand that not everybody leaves, or that you can get attached to people and not be concerned about that. And we also want to make sure then a lot of children start to shut down because they don't want to be upset. They don't want to be, oh, okay, this is a horrible thing. I keep getting my heart broken. People don't stay. And again, as I always say on my past shows, children always blame themselves. And it does, and no matter how good of a parent you are, no matter how much you tell your child, it's not your fault. Children will blame themselves, and they will replay it again and again in their head. Maybe if I did this better, maybe if I was a better child, maybe this was my fault. And I think we want to make sure at these different stages, if any child has, you know, this three-year-old, his parents got divorced when he was three. That in itself is very traumatic. What type of help? I know they have not, this grandmother has not said anything about if the child, how the child reacted to the divorce. Did the child have any outbursts, acting out behaviors? Was the child able to speak to someone? Did they need to see someone? And what was the child's view about the divorce? I mean, also, how did mom and dad divorce? Are they somewhat nice to each other? Can they be cordial to each other? Or was it a very tumultuous divorce? Because that, too, has a huge impact on children. I know a lot of times people say that the child doesn't understand, he doesn't hear anything, we keep everything secret. Children find out. They listen, they hear things from their friends make comments. So I think it's really important to be able to sit down with your child and have that open dialogue. They don't need to know every detail of what the divorce, why it happened, and what's going on. But I think they need to see mom and dad are okay, and that as a team you will work forward. It's okay, yes, mom and dad are not going to be together, but you're both there and one isn't going to leave. And I think then, you know, as now she's saying, as this last relationship, the grandson is starting to become withdrawn and quiet, much different than how he should has been acting, and that's his personality. And I think, yes, this is something definitely not to really worry, but I always say it's a red flag. When there's a red flag or there's behaviors that are different than usual, it's a child's way of crying out. It's a child's way of showing us something's not right. I'm not feeling good. So I think it's really important, and I think this grandson is so lucky to have a grandmother like you that is noticing. And I'm not saying that mom is bad or dad is bad, mom for dating or dad for mom and dad for having a divorce. But I think sometimes when people are going through a bitter custody battle or a divorce, yes, it's so traumatic, so upsetting. Sometimes it's hard to really realize what the impact is having on your child. So I think one, as a grandmother, I would be able to, if you could be able to sit down with your grandson and speak with him and ask him, you know, what does he think about this divorce? What is his take on it? Because I think if you let a child speak and ask him these questions, what do you think about it, you'll really get to hear what they think is going on. And I think in being able to sit with them and let them know it's safe and it's okay for them to be upset that mommy and daddy aren't together. And it's okay to be upset with mommy and daddy. It could be okay to be about that, and having it as a safe environment, creating a safe place where this child can be encouraged to show his feelings, can be encouraged to be able to express how he feels, his concerns, but then also to be comforted. Yes, you won't be able to fix everything overnight. Things don't resolve right away. But I think you're teaching this child early life lessons that, yes, things happen in life that are upsetting, but as a family, we stick together and we'll work through this. So I would also, you know, find out, I'm not sure how many different boyfriends have come and go. I think it would be important to also see how the child feels about that. And does he feel it's his fault, which a lot of times they do. And I think exploring that, I think then it's also, you know, speaking to your daughter. I know that's a really tough one, and, you know, they want to move on with their life and start dating again. But I think it's being able to have that dialogue that, you know, maybe not, you know, sometimes there's no guarantee in life that the person we're with is going to be the one we're with forever, and we don't know sometimes why relationships end. But maybe kind of, you know, giving it a time mark so all these different people are not kind of coming in and out of this child's life. So the child, as well as the mother, sometimes, you know, even we don't know why as adults relationships don't work out and they're upsetting and confusing and can cause damage. Could you imagine a 3-year-old, an 8-year-old child, how confusing and how hard it is to grasp what's been going on? So I think it's also important to speak with your daughter about that and see if she's noticing any of this. And I think then also speaking to dad, and maybe at one point being able to sit down with mom, your daughter, and the grandson, and really just come with some sort of plan and let this grandson know he's always welcome to come to you, grandma, or mom, or dad, if he's concerned, if he's upset, that it's okay for him to be upset and that the family, things will be okay. You're going through a tough time. but you'll be able to move forward and take care of this as a family. So again, thank you so much for writing in with this question. Let's go on to our third and final question. Dear Insight into Healing, I've been hearing a lot about EMDR. What is it? Also, is it only for first responders and trauma victims? What an incredible, incredible question. I just became trained in EMDR. It's eye movement desensitization reprocessing. It was created by Francine Shapiro. It is, yes, for first responders and trauma victims, but not only first responders and trauma victims. Other areas it works in is anxiety, stuck thoughts, OCD, addictive behaviors, impulses, such as sometimes people have impulses of, you know, picking their head, picking their nails, or fear of water, fear of heights, fear of snakes. We can also use EMDR, EMD, in different situations like that. And how it works is a client will come into the office with a presenting problem, something that's happening in the current day life. What I always like to use is, say someone comes in and says, okay, I have to make this speech for work, and I'm just so nervous, my stomach hurts, I'm not sleeping, I'm throwing up, I just get so panicked, and I can't make the speech, but I have to make the speech, or I'm going to lose my job. So I will work with that person and say, okay, so this is our presenting, this is the most current issue that's going on. If you had a T-shirt on, and you would say, what would that say about you making that speech? What is the negative cognition? Would it be, I'm alone, I'm not good enough, I'm not safe, I'm not in control? And I think by looking through these negative cognitions, and there's a whole list of negative cognitions, I think that's really important to be able to kind of pinpoint where that comes in. And I will say, okay, so look at taking a speech. Look at that picture. What is the worst memory? What is the worst idea when you look at that picture that you see? Is it that you see yourself on stage and fainting, or you see yourself on stage and you forget your whole speech? And then you say, okay, the positive cognition, would it be, I'm not in control, I'm not safe, I'm not good enough, I'm not okay? And then I will have that client float back to about 4 years old, going backwards. What are other times in your life that you didn't feel safe? And those will be all different memories. And what I like to do, what the practitioners like to do, is to go back to about, if we can, to age 4 with that negative cognition. So let's pick, I'm not safe. And then we'll go all the way back to age 4. And as we work through, we can start with that one, as we say, the touchstone memory, which would be the one at 4. Or we can do more current ones, depending where the client is, and also clinical recommendation. And then we will work through those. Usually the first or second memories we start with, it'll take a little bit longer to work through them. But by the time you get to maybe other memories, you'll start working through them a little bit quicker. What happens is trauma gets locked, stuck in the brain, and also stuck in the body. The body remembers trauma. That's why a lot of times if you're nervous and something, you might feel it in your stomach, you get tightness of chest, or you get really nervous, you start shaking. That's your body remembering the trauma. And it's also been medically proven that the mind, the trauma gets stuck in the mind. So by also, you know, getting the memory, getting the negative cognition, and then pairing it with a positive cognition, I am safe, and then utilizing bilateral eye movements. What we do with that is the client will be watching my fingers, keeping their head still, and moving their eyes side to side without moving their head. What that does is starts unlocking the trauma, unlocking those stuck thoughts and beliefs, and then being able to reprocess them with a healthier cognition, a healthier positive cognition. And we light up the brain so that all those locked thoughts, locked trauma will start moving through. It's similar to REM sleep. When you're sleeping, your eyes are moving back and forth. And what the mind is doing, it's pruning your thoughts, your events, your experiences, what can stay, what we don't need, what we might need. So by doing the bilateral, it's the same thing. We're pruning everything that's going on. And what a lot of times is really important is when these associations, these thoughts come up as the bilateral eye movements, it is like you're on a train and you're just looking at the scenery, looking out the window. Whatever these associations or thoughts or memories come up, don't engage them. Just let them pass by as if you're on a train and you're watching them pass. You don't want to be stuck at any station, as to say. You want just the thoughts and the memories to go through. And by doing this, and also by with the bilateral eye movements, again, we are unlocking those negative thoughts and then being able to work through them with more of a healthier view. And also, you also have had a lot of clients say it's just a shift. It's a shift in the way of thinking. It's a shift in a way of interacting. It's a shift in a way of just seeing things. It's almost like, you know, sometimes you will feel like for a couple of seconds that you're really right there in that event, but then it just kind of goes through and it works itself out. So a lot of times that can happen, again, as I said, with anxiety, with, you know, a single type of trauma. But then it's also very, very helpful, very, seen such incredible results when there's complex trauma, when there's, you know, different numbers of trauma, when there's been a long sexual abuse history, or as we said, for first responders, policemen, firemen, people who come back from war, where they're seeing trauma every day as their job, and it gets stuck, and their body feels it. So that can also will also help alleviate all that trauma and help kind of get a healthier way of going through it. And I think, you know, a lot of times when there's trauma, the body reacts, the mind reacts, fight, flight, or freeze. Those are the three scenarios. So many times people go back, why didn't I do this? Why did I freeze? Why didn't I should have fought? I've done that. But it's the mind. We don't have control over what happens to us in trauma like that. And I think sometimes we're so caught up in, I should have done this. What's wrong with me? This is, I think, so important to know. Those are the three stages, fight, flight, or freeze. So I think it's being able to say, you know what, I didn't do this. I couldn't have done anything like this. It's not something I could have done better. I could have done this. So it's being able to work through that trauma, and this will help get those stuck beliefs, these blocked beliefs, and help the client really be able to work through it. I have seen just such incredible, incredible results with EMDR, everything from clients that have had sexual abuse to a single phobia to OCD to anxiety, or preparing for speech or preparing for a performance, or even just preparing for asking for a raise or speaking to their parents or being a little bit more assertive. And I think this is just so important to be able to start building these skills. So, yes, I mean, I think EMDR is becoming more and more popular, and I think it's just such a necessity. I really wish that they would teach this in school as part of there with all the other different subjects that we learn, because I think it's so important as a child, as an adolescent, as an adult, that we understand trauma, we understand how it gets stuck in the brain, and that, yes, you know, sometimes they say just get over it. We can't just get over it. We need help to help unlock those thoughts. It's not a weakness. You have to, you know, I always say you go through the trauma alone. You don't have to go through recovery alone. You don't have to go through the healing alone. And I think that's so, so powerful. You know, what I really want to do with my show, with my other show, the Alexa Show, and my book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos, I really want to start removing that stigma of trauma, loss, addiction, mental illness, and be able to have this dialogue. And I know it's very, very tough topics. It's hard stuff, especially if you're not working in the field or exposed to it, to kind of be present with it. But I think it's so important for us to be able to take the stigma, the shame, the guilt, and start getting rid of that. There's no place in that. There's no need for that in this world. There's no need for that to be around us. I think by education and gaining these tools, we can help so many people. We can help ourselves. We can save a life. And we can also stop, you know, so many people are carrying around this trauma, this guilt, this shame, this loss, that it just needs for people to heal and to be able to move forward with their life and not suffer anymore. So again, everyone, I wanted to thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Insight into Healing is found on Facebook at facebook.com/insightintohealing. You can also send any questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Also, please look out for the Alexa Show, which airs Sunday nights at 8 p.m. on alexatvshow.com. And also, please check out my new book, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos. You can find us on Facebook, Finding Your Peace Within the Chaos .com, or you can find it at www.ccbpublishing.com www.aservodidio.html. Well, again, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Thank you for all your support and all your questions. Everyone, have a good night, and God bless.
Progressive brings you Flowetry with Flow.